are two statements that I want to comment on before we turn our attention to Paul. First, in Islam, when the Chinese government is encouraging people not to fast, the Chinese government is communist. They're not fond of any religion other than the religion of communism. But the Islamic fast is not an Islamic fast. It's not either, would not be accurate. The fast was part of, as are all Islamic customs, all five of the pillars of Islam, each of them was based on the pagan ideology that preceded Muhammad. He simply, since Muhammad wasn't created, he wasn't very bright, every aspect, the Hajj, for example, the praying five times a day, all of it was derived from the pagan mythology that preceded Muhammad by centuries. So there's nothing Islamic about the fast. Everything that is part of the pillars of Islam was simply copied from the previous pagan religions of the Arabians. Second, it's not a fast. You know, it's not like you go for 40 days and 40 nights and don't eat. It's not like you go even for one day and don't eat. The Ramadan deal, first of all, it's Ramadan floats around the calendar because Muhammad was so stupid. He eliminated the inter-calendar month that was used by every civilized nation for thousands of years to keep the lunar calendar that every nation used in sync with the solar year. But Muhammad was so convinced that since his God was a lunar deity, that the moon should reign supreme over the sun. And so he eliminated the extra month that is added every 2 to 3 years to keep the lunar calendar in sync with the solar year. And every civilization had done this for thousands of years, had done this for, you know, many thousands of years. And so Ramadan, because the Islamic calendar is 12 lunar phases of 29.5 days long, just meanders all around the year and no longer is fixed in time. That Muhammad's stupidity. Now, all they do, by the way, is they refrain from eating during the day. Sun goes down, chow down. You can eat yourself into oblivion during the night. You just don't eat lunch. Eat breakfast before the sun rises, or hiding in a shadow. And you skip lunch and you eat dinner as soon as the sun goes down. That's all there is to it. The next was the President Obama calling the killing of the 17-year-old Arab Muslim a heinous murder. Heinous murder. So the murderer is heinous. Now, everyone is assuming that it was an Israeli zealot that perpetrated the murder. He's heinous. And yet the murder, the kidnap and murder of the three Israelis, according to the President of the United States, it was simply senseless. So when the president was asked to give a quote on the kidnap and murder of the three Israelis, one was an American citizen as well, the term that he used to describe the murder was senseless. And now that it is a Jew that is being suspected of killing a Arab Muslim, it's heinous. Boy, do you think that maybe if people had their eyes open, if their minds were open, that they would detect a little anti-Jewish sentiment here? Wow. Pretty disgusting. Well, returning to Paul, I am aware that Christians have been led to believe that the mythical figure known as Jesus Christ, there was no Jesus, that Christ is not a last name. No one was named Jesus until the 17th century. Christ is not a name. It's not even a transliteration of his title, and it's not even a translation of his title. But they've been led to believe that, nonetheless, that this, put in quotes, Jesus Christ was the founder of the religion of Christianity. By the way, there's no reference to Christianity anywhere in the Greek text of the Christian New Testament. In fact, there's no reference to a religion of Christianity anywhere, and much less just Christianity. That's all derived by men long after the Christian New Testament was written. And Christians have also been led to believe that Paul spoke for this character that has been renamed Jesus Christ. But the fact is, folks, none of those conclusions are supportable by the evidence. All myth, all untrue, all lies that have been promoted so many times that people just naturally assume them to be true. Kind of like we began in the first segment today talking about Palestinians. There is no such place as Palestine. There is no such thing as Palestinian. And yet you'll read it in every newspaper. You'll hear it on every news broadcast. You'll hear it spoken by every politician. And yet it's what it is simply a lie that has been repeated so often that people just assume it's true. Well, Christianity, Christian, Jesus Christ, all fall into that category, as well as the lie that Paul spoke for Jesus Christ. All of it's lies that have been repeated so many times that people have just worn down over time and believe all of it's true, and even though none of it's supportable. The institution of Christianity is founded entirely on Paul's writings. It's not based on Yosha's words or deeds. In fact, Yosha's words and deeds condemn the notion of a religion of Christianity. Absolutely destroy it. After all, Yosha was Torah observant. Every minute aspect of his life and his teachings were derived from and inspired by the Torah. Therefore, to follow him, a follower would have to become Torah observant. And in so doing, they would cease to be a Christian. And it's not hard, folks, to prove that Christianity has nothing to do with a figure known as Jesus Christ, or that the name Jesus Christ is wrong on all accounts. Boy, you know, if the name of your religion is wrong, if the name of your religious founder is wrong, and if its basis is obviously untrue, that the person that you misname, that you claim is the founder of your religion, that you can't listen to anything, you can't process anything he had to say, you can't follow anything that he did, you can't follow his example without ceasing to be what you claim to be. You would think there wouldn't be 3 billion adherents to such a stupid, such a foolish, such an erroneous religious scheme. And yet there are. So to his credit or shame, depending on your perspective, Shaul was telling the truth up to a point. Now, he wasn't inspired by men. In his second letter to the Corinthians, as we have already shared, he claimed to be demon-possessed, guided and controlled by one of Satan's messengers. That was his source of inspiration, folks. He admitted it. You can read it in 2 Corinthians even today. Go read it. Read the 2 Corinthians. He admits that he was demon-possessed. That was his inspiration. It's obvious once your mind is open, once your eyes are open, once you're willing to consider what he had to say. But that's not to say that everything Paul wrote was inaccurate. He correctly, in his opening statement, referred to God as the Father. But this statement of fact in a sea of lies only makes his deceptions appear credible. You know, it's like the counterfeit bill. If you have a counterfeit bill, you can't pass it off as being the real thing unless you make it look like it is the real thing. And so most of the strokes on a counterfeit bill are accurate. They're consistent. But the counterfeit bill is not only worth nothing, even though it appears to be real, it's actually a crime to hold it. And so the same is true with a truth, a statement that is true being woven into a sea of lies. All the statement that is true does is make the deception more beguiling. That's the case throughout with Paul. So far too many people have been beguiled into believing that everything Satan says is a lie. So they can't imagine the fact that Paul was inspired by Satan, because they would assume then that Paul would be encouraging people to worship Satan. And while he is, they don't see it. And the reason they don't see it is they don't recognize that Satan doesn't want to be worshipped as the adversary. And that's what Satan means, Hasatan in Hebrew. Means the adversary. And the last thing Satan wants to be known as is the adversary. He wants to be known as God. He wants to be seen as the Lord. He wants to be worshipped. And so what Paul has done for Satan is the same thing Muhammad did for him, which is to create a means to fool people into believing that the God of their religion is actually God, when in fact the God of their religion is Satan. Paul's Lord is Satan. Paul's caricature of Yahusha is actually Satan. Islam's Allah is Satan. These religions have beguiled people into worshiping Satan as if he was God. That's what Satan wants. That's why he inspired these two men to write these things, to say these things. We'll be back in a moment. There really are not a whole lot of things that are more important to recognize. That when you talk about satanic inspiration, that Satan has no interest in being worshipped to Satan. So all satanic religions all condemn Satan, the adversary. Christianity does. Islam does. Islam has this whole diatribe about Satan bad. But that's exactly Satan's viewpoint. Satan is bad. And the adversary title is bad. He hates the adversary title. He wants to be seen above the Most High, which means that he has to be the one and only God. Allahu Akbar. Allah is greater. Allah is the greatest. That's how he wants to be seen. And so when Christians are told that Paul was demon-possessed, by his own admission, in fact, when they have it in their Bibles, in 2 Corinthians, that he admits to being demon-possessed, they can't even process it, because they would assume that someone who is demon-possessed is going to act like a little girl in the Exodus and vomit up guacamole, you know, and the head's going to rotate 360 degrees, and they're going to inspire devil worship. But that's the opposite of what any rational person would conclude based upon what's known about Hasatan, the adversary, and what he wants. I mean, it's all presented for you in Yeshaya, Isaiah 14. Who he is, what he wants. And he doesn't want to be worshipped as the adversary. He wants to be known as God. That's why Allah is Allahu Akbar. Allah is greater. That's why in Christianity, Paul created a caricature of that he called Jesus Christ, who is now elevated to the status of God and is called Lord Jesus Christ. It's like another guise for Satan. And very difficult, almost impossible, for Christians to realize that's the case. When they go to the little churches, you know, I see all those poor Copt Christians that are being persecuted. The girls are being kidnapped and raped. I witness them all in this in their churches, and you say to them, "You're worshiping Satan, and you just don't know it." And every Catholic that goes to every Catholic church, and you see them drive up their fancy cars and pretend that they're worshiping God when God doesn't want to be worshipped, and they're worshiping Satan. The church is Satan's. Always has been. The religion of Christianity is satanic. Always has been. Very difficult for Christians to understand that, because their view of Satan has been described as this hideously ugly character and satanic worshiping. And it's not the case at all. He's beautiful. It's Paul saw Satan on the road to Damascus. He quoted one of Satan's most indelible lines. It's difficult to kick against the goat. He described that same pointed stick, that same thorn in his side when he admitted to being demon-possessed. You know, it's just a lack of people thinking, you know, of coming to understand what Yahweh told us about HaSatan, the adversary, in the book of prophetic pronouncements through Yashaya. 14th chapter explains everything you need to know. And then you understand why in religions like Christianity and religions like Islam, anyone who exposes them for the frauds that they are is automatically associated with the devil. You know, they say, you know, you're speaking on behalf of Satan. The religions have been constructed to have anyone who tells the faithful the truth to be aligned with Satan. The religions are constructed to make Satan the adversary, which sets them up perfectly to worship him as if he were God. Well, the fact is that people believe that in a satanic religion, Satan is worshipped as himself. But that is not how he or his associates deceive. And it's not what he wants. Satan usurps Yahweh's credibility to fool the unsuspecting into worshiping him, not as the adversary, but as if he were God. Satan wants to be known by the title Yahweh gave him, not by the title that Yahweh uses for himself, the title that Yahweh gave to HaSatan, Baal, Lord. It elicits bowing, control, servitude, ownership, and worship. The very thing that HaSatan covets, the very signature of every religion, the very thing that Yahweh despises. Welcome back to Shadrach and Miss. Before we engage in a conversation with Kirk, there were two statements in that herbal healer ad that I want to just bring to our listeners' attention. When they claim to have an academy where they're going to give you a course, you know, if you really think that's like going to school and becoming proficient in some subjects, you need to have your head examined. You go to Herbal Healer's website, and you tell me if the folks that put out that website are capable of having an accredited academy. Now, academy don't have accreditation, so that's probably why they're using the term academy as opposed to college or university. But this is not an accredited course. Now, the next thing is where they said that they are suppliers of medicines. If you want to believe that they're, I mean, I would not question whatsoever that they're a supplier of herbs and vitamins and natural remedies. And that's fine. I have no issue if you want to sell herbs and natural remedies and vitamins and mineral supplements. That's all a fine thing to do. But when you refer to them as medicines, then you get under fall under the issues associated with the FDA as to making a claim that is a medical claim, and if you're making a medical claim, then you need to have FDA approval. So it's a, we've got to be careful when we advertise things that we think these things through. That said, Kirk, I made a rather bold statement. I said that Muslims and Christians have both been beguiled into believing that Allah and Jesus Christ are God, when in fact they're actually worshiping Satan and don't know it.
Yes, sir. Okay, it's quite obvious, really, if you study a little, you read a little.
Yeah, that's my conclusion as well. That it's actually obvious, it's undeniable, it's clear if you read it and study a bit that that's the conclusion you come to, and yet you tell a Muslim that, you tell a Christian that, and they can't even process it.
I have in my library, I have an old book from a preacher down in Atlanta during the Civil War. He wrote mm-hmm. this book, and he states in there in one of the chapters how he called him Jesus, of course, never asked for a church, never gave a program that they said,
right.
You know, if he wanted a church, certainly he would have set up some kind of orderly system for him to proceed. He never asked. If you're looking for a church, it ain't there.
It ain't there.
And the simple thing, if you know anything about history, about Talmud, and I mean not Talmud, but about Nimrod and Semiramis, right. Then you know that that's Christmas, and you know that that's Easter. I mean, even preachers talk about that. I mean, it's not like a radical thing. It's in every history book. You can buy books on Babylon and all that kind of things, and that's Christianity.
Yes.
In fact, the average person that I talk to about Christianity, the greatest fear they have, which is understandable, the first one is, I don't want to lose my family.
Right.
And it kind of revolves around Christmas and Easter holidays.
Yeah.
So they're going to celebrate it, and you're asked to walk away from it, and then you can't see the grandchildren and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The big issues in Christianity, the big holidays, which are Easter and Christmas, are purely pagan. Both of them are denounced by Yahweh. I mean, overtly denounced. I mean, he goes into this whole Christmas tree thing and the celebration of Christmas. And he just absolutely says it's an abomination. And he goes beyond that to say that those who do it are stupid. Mm-hmm. And then Easter and the Asherah pole and all of the things associated with the Mother of God, the Queen of Heaven, and the birth and death of the Son of the Son in these pagan religions, he also denounces that. And you look at it and you'd say, you know, Easter was first celebrated in Babylon. It bears absolutely no association whatsoever to anything that Yahweh or Yahusha said and did. And so you got a religion that your holiest days was the birth of God. God wasn't born. And the death of your God, God didn't die. And there was no bodily resurrection. And it's all based upon pagan deceptions. Mm-hmm. Yet they can't see it. And this isn't hidden. I mean, there isn't any scholar anywhere in the world, including any religious scholar, that doesn't know that Easter and Christmas are completely pagan holidays that have all to do with the sun and the moon.
And I knew all that 20 years before I ever read anything you wrote. So, I mean, it's not like it was hidden out there. And this is embarrassing to admit, but we had a huge Bible collection,
mm-hmm.
quote unquote. And in it was one of the key ones was the first edition King Iams Bible.
Right.
And I used to stare at that and say, I wonder why they call it King Iams. I mean, is that embarrassing or what?
Yeah.
You know,
What you're referring to is the fact that the first edition of the King Iams, even the second and third editions, he was King Iams because there was no J in early 17th century. The J hadn't even been invented yet. So the king wasn't King James, he was King Iams.
Yeah. So there's
and,
no Jesus.
Right.
No Jew, there's no Jerusalem.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, you read about the Trinity and how important the Trinity is. That's the ultimate litmus test for Christians. They pray to the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. Purely Babylonian. Pagan. You know, through and through. Now, they celebrate the resurrection, the bodily resurrection of Jesus. He has risen. And yet their own eyewitness accounts say that no one recognized him. His mother didn't recognize him. The disciples didn't recognize him. The guys that were followed him the last two or three years of his ministry on the road to Emmaus, they didn't. No one recognized him. Heck, his own mother thought he was the gardener.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Well, Mary, let's go.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a little quick question. It may be a little bit off, you were talking about being beguiled as the whole theme of Paul. And I spoke to someone yesterday, and in the conversation, I'm sure I wasn't very helpful, because I really didn't know what to say because it kind of caught me off guard. And this gentleman is obviously getting it, through his studies and everything. And one of his problems was that, he's married to a woman when he was a Christian and she's not on the same page with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just causing a great, rift between them is my impression that I got from his conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have that problem because my wife Tara and I, we're on the same page like from day one. In fact, I think she was shocked that that I could quickly just turn the other way. I mean, if I'm presented with enough facts, I'd change my argument.
You and I are the same in the sense we go where the words lead, and your wife, Terry, is the exact same. She was confronted with facts that did not gel, did not that undermined her religion. And rather than saying, I'm going to reject the facts, she rejected her religion and said, I'm going to go where the words lead. And you were the same. So you rather than, so many of us choose opposites, I'm actually a very shy individual. My wife is very outgoing. And so the fact that I was shy and she was outgoing, I was attracted to a lot of things I was attracted to my wife, but that was one of the things I was attracted. In your particular case, you were a very rational, logical individual that was always willing to put reason and evidence above beliefs, and you married someone that was the same way.
We talked about it when we were dating. I mean, we were both seekers. I didn't know we had all the clue. I mean, we realized we didn't know everything, but we kept seeking. We got through a window rabbit hole for a while with Gene Scott down in Los Angeles, but I was kind of beguiled by his PhD and his speak 12 languages and Cockney spoken, he'd write everything down and so forth. But that's, it did allow me to know a lot of things. So when I finally saw the truth, I mean, I could connect the dots. It wasn't an experience that, where did that come from? I have to look up everything. I could say, verify.
And that when you verify, then you're speaking from what you yourself know. You're not parroting something that somebody else has said.
No, I don't have to say because you said. I mean, you're kind of irrelevant. You're presenting.
That's right.
I don't mean to think you're irrelevant. You're not.
I want to be considered. That's the nicest compliment that I've received in a long time. Is being called irrelevant. I absolutely want to be seen as irrelevant. I view myself as irrelevant.
Well, that was the second part. The first problem this particular person was having is that he's having a lot of difficulty because his wife is not on the page, and I didn't really know what to tell him other than I can listen to you, I can feel for you, and all that sort of thing. But if somebody, I don't care if it's your wife or your sister or your relative, mom, pop, if they don't want to dig it out, if they don't want to go find the facts out for themselves, I mean, you can only tell them so much.
Correct.
And then they got to start. Yeah. They got to do this for themselves. The walk is to Passover is alone. I mean, one single file, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It ain't hold hands and I'll pull you through. It's you got to walk through there with your own feet.
No. So, what's interesting, if you look at Yosha's own family, there's only one member of his family that followed him.
Right.
Jacob, his name has been changed, of course, to mirror, to flatter the English king. But Jacob, Jacob is the only one that followed him. Now, I'm going to just assume here just for a moment Yosha is more compelling, a more sophisticated linguist, more knowledgeable, and vastly better able to present his case than you and I are. Well, I don't think that would be much of a stretch, because Yahweh said that Yosha was his mouth. So that means you're dealing with Yahweh himself. And
Right. So since
he created the universe, composed DNA, I have a hunch, and he's the author of the Torah, I have a hunch that he can present his case better than we can. And yet he got one member of his family to follow him. And then quite a few members of the family. Now you look at all of the discussions that Yosha had with the ruling establishment, the political and religious leaders. There isn't a case where any of them was convinced. I mean, there was two people who privately processed the information, were never the recipient of a direct conversation, but processed the information and came to him. But never once did he convince somebody in an argument. Never once. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Kirk about how we handle those that we love, that we're close to, and family, wives, husbands, friends, that extended family. That when we come to know the truth about Yahweh, his Torah teaching and his covenant, its terms and conditions, and we engage in Yahweh's family, what do we do? How do we handle those who are still estranged from God? And Kirk, the first thing we talked about is that Yosha didn't even try.
No.
He made no attempt to encourage in the sense of compel anyone to join his family. Never had a debate with someone and said, you know, if you think about things this way, and you leave your stupid religion, then you'll come to know me. All you do is say, point to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms and say, if you want to know Yahweh, you want to know who I am, you want to know Yahweh, that's the way. And you constantly point to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, which is to say that we have exactly the same opportunity that everyone he talked to. I can tell you in my own family, I have... My situation is that with my wife and my eldest son, now, when I was married and when my children were very young, I was a Christian. And then as my children were growing, I became an agnostic. And it wasn't until my children were really off to college that I came to know Yahweh and his Torah and become a member of his covenant family. And so with my wife, who was... Very much into tradition and very much into family and family traditions. I have been able to convince her that she should no longer participate in anything associated with the Christian religion. So I've made progress. Have I gotten her to the point where what we have shared has encouraged her to participate in the covenant? No.
Mikra?
No. And the Mikra? No. I celebrate the Mikra without her participating, but she's actually eager to work through it with me. I mean, we'll do the lamb, we'll do the. She won't participate, but she encourages me. You know, so and we don't argue about it. When she wants to talk about it, we talk about it. When she doesn't want to talk about it, I don't push it on her, and we still have a wonderful relationship. My relationship with my wife's probably as good as it's ever been. So I've seen to it that it's not something we argue about, because if we were to argue about it, it would push her further away from it. It would galvanize a position of estrangement. And you
can't recover. I mean,
no. And so I'm there and I'm eager and available to talk to her at any time she would like to discuss it.
Well, you know,
my eldest son, I got him exactly the same place. Now, he knows everything that I've shared with him and I've shared on this program about Yahweh. And at one point, he was virtually there, and then he really got some harsh indoctrination and anthropology from school and kind of took a different approach, but he is hugely anti-religious. So there's always hope. And my youngest son, we celebrate our relationship as part of the covenant. But it was not based upon anything that I knew or said, but simply what do they wanted in their lives.
Yeah. Okay. It occurred to me after I hung up the phone with this gentleman that I should have said this, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I recall that Jacob or Israel,
yeah.
His wife, one of his wives at least, used to carry pagan statues around with him, and I don't think he would have browbeat her or said, this is the way, now toe the line or go away.
Right.
So, I mean, he recognized that, look, people have to find that in their own heart, not in their own mind.
Right.
And there's no purpose to holler at somebody if carry.
Let me give you a great example of what you've just said. Remember when the children of Israel had been led out of Egypt by Yahweh, and he performed all these marvelous miracles in their presence and spoke to them personally and directly? And yet, what did the children of Israel do when they heard God's voice presenting his Torah message directly to them and had seen all of these wonderful miracles that he had performed freeing them?
They went, too loud, don't scare us. You know?
Yeah, I don't want to hear your voice anymore. I don't want you telling me this message yourself. And Yahweh said, you know, I get it. I understand. That's probably too strong. And he says, so, you know, I'm going to send a diminished manifestation of myself, and I'm going to whisper to you as opposed to shout at you. So Yahweh's own approach with his chosen people is exactly the same as what we're experiencing. Okay, I'll give you your space. If you want to know me, you know where to find me. I'll be waiting for you there. Thank you, Kirk. We'll be back tomorrow.